Evening. Thank you all for being here tonight. My lesson this evening is really more of a question to you, and that is, what are you afraid of? What are you fearful of? What scares you the most? And not really from a worldly sense or you know, make-believe ghost or any of that nonsense, but what are you truly afraid of? What really scares you? You know, there's a lot of common things to be afraid of. Snakes, spiders, you know, those are all pretty obvious. Finding a pickle hidden under your French fries when you order the basket meal, that's, you know, truly terrifying. But these are more worldly things, more physical type things to be afraid of. So not really concerned a whole lot with that, but what are, you know, some more personal type things to be afraid of or be fearful of? You know, rejection or loneliness or maybe being embarrassed. But even larger than that, even bigger than that, what about death? Are you afraid of death? You know, is that something that you're scared of? And as we go through this lesson, I want you to have that in the back of your minds as we go through some of this. So to get started with, we're gonna look at fear and there's both good and bad types of fear that can both benefit us and ultimately hurt us. I don't want to necessarily say, you know, acceptable fear or unacceptable fear, but we're gonna look at a few of those. So to start off with, being fearful or being afraid, and a bad aspect of that is how fear can magnify our problems and minimize God and minimize the ultimate power and authority of God. So the first story we're going to look at is here in Numbers chapter 13, where God is speaking to Moses and God is giving the land of Canaan to the children of Israel, and how fear affected this group. So Numbers chapter 13, verses 1 and 2, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I have given to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, every one a leader among them." So again, God speaking to Moses, saying that he is giving the land of Canaan to the children of Israel. Not that they have to buy it, or not that they have to, you know, meet any certain conditions for it. It's being given. It's already been decided. God is giving this land to the children of Israel. So let's keep reading down. Picking back up in verse 27, I've paraphrased this story by quite a bit, so I encourage you to go read the full story. But picking up in verse 27, this is after the 12 spies have gone out to spy out the land. They spent the time they spent there, and they've come back, and this is the report back to the group. "Then they told him and said, 'We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land to the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan.' Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it.' But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.' And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, 'The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight.'" So in this story, again, 12 spies go into this land, and they come back with this land that God is giving them, and they come back with a report of these great big giants and these great big huge guys and all these people and all these fierce other groups, if you will, and they say, "No way, man, we can't do it. There's no way." Now, of the 12 spies, two believed in God, which was Caleb and Joshua. They came back and said, "No, we can do it." I don't have the verses about Joshua in there, but But, you know, they said that they believed, and they gave a lot better report. But the other 10, again, they came back, you know, telling this big story and the things that they had seen. So in this case, fear magnifies these problems. Fear and what their perception of the reality was, of course, these giants. It distorted the promise that God made to them, and it distorted what God wanted for these people. So while they were scared, you know, from a physical sense, it inhibited their abilities here. They were intimidated. Those 10 spies were intimidated, you know, by what they saw. And, you know, being intimidated, it's a real, you know, I can see how they might have felt that way. Years ago, when I was a sophomore in high school on the JV football team, it worked out where the junior high guys were playing in Lochney, same day we were. And while they were playing, we were all up in the stands watching the game, you know, and came time for us to go to the locker room to get ready. And just the way everything was situated, we were going to walk right past the team that we were about to play. And so poor little Memphis, Texas there, they might have had 15 guys on the team, and they were kind of outside watching the game. And well, me and the other JV guys, we were in the stands. Well, a lot of the varsity guys were sitting up there with us, and a lot of the juniors and seniors were sitting up there with us. And so we got up to go in, and I had the idea, hey guys, hey, why don't you all come in the locker room with us, and we'll kind of make it look like these Memphis guys that we're all on the JV football team. So we all get up, probably 30 of us, and we go cruising by, you know, everybody's kind of sizing everybody up, kind of giving the eyes. And those poor Memphis kids, their eyes got real big, and you know, they saw all of us walking by, and you know, I don't know if they just weren't that good or if that intimidation really put them down, but we cooked them pretty good that night. And but you know, they were intimidated. That intimidation, you know, it's a real aspect. It's a real factor to contend with. And so back to our story, the children of Israel, they were intimidated, and again, it affected them in a great way. In fact, I don't have the verses up, but it, further in that story, they even go as far to say, well, we just need to go back to Egypt. It would have been better for us to have died in slavery in Egypt than to go into this land that God has promised us. And they considered going back. They wanted to, you know, to find a leader, find somebody to lead them back. And they complained and whined and cried about it. And Caleb and Joshua, you know, they were never afraid. But I think it's safe to say that they feared God, and they feared not doing what God told them to do. So this land, again, it was promised to them by God, and all they had to do was believe. But instead, they chose to run away. They chose to leave. They chose to get out of there because of fear, and how fear blew that out of proportion for them. So what was the result of this story? You know, what happened next? We find that in Numbers chapter 14, verse 21. But truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have put me to the test now these 10 times and have not heeded my voice, they certainly shall not see the land of which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. And skipping down to verse 26, and the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I have heard the complaints which the children of Israel make against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in this wilderness, all of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above. So the result of this is the giants, you know, they don't even, and the Amalekites and Canaanites and all these other people, they don't even, you know, get, they don't even go fight these, they fight the children of Israel. The ones who didn't believe, they died in the wilderness. They wandered in the wilderness until they died. That was the consequence of them not obeying. And so this group, you know, they were afraid of these giants, but they weren't afraid of God. They weren't afraid of the consequences of disobeying God. And that's not how we need to live. That's not how we need to be. And the punishment for them was a pretty bad death. So I want us to think of how maybe we complain against God. Maybe not like the children of Israel did, you know, wanting to go back to Egypt, so on and so forth. But what do we take for granted in our lives that we actually have it really good, but we complain to God about how bad it is? So we'll try not to feel that way. One moment, please. Oh, I got these a little bit backwards, sorry. The next story is the story of Jonah and how fear can keep us from being involved and how fear can keep us from saying what needs to be said. So here in Jonah, chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, "Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, 'Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me.' But Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish, so he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord." So, you know, pretty familiar story. Jonah doesn't want to go to Nineveh. Jonah is scared. He's afraid. And that fear tried to keep him from being involved and doing what he needed to do. Now, of course, the rest of that story, you know, Jonah ends up in the belly of a big fish, and he changes his mind. He ends up going to Nineveh and doing what he did there. But trying to gain some context from all this, you know, I want to do a little research as to what, you know, why was it such a big deal about Nineveh? What was so bad about Nineveh? In my research, I find this in Nahum chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. "Woe to the bloody city. It is full of lies and robbery. Its victim never departs. The noise of a whip and the noise of rattling wheels, of galloping horses, of clattering chariots, horsemen charge with bright sword and glittering spear. There is a multitude of slain, a great number of bodies, countless corpses. They stumble over the corpses. Because of the multitude of harlotries of the seductive harlot, the mistress of sorceries who sells nations through her harlotries and families through her sorceries." This is the city that God just told Noah to go cry out against and to go speak out against and to go tell them how they're doing wrong. This was a huge city. This was believed to be one of the biggest cities of its time. So I could see why Jonah might feel that way. I could see why he might be a little afraid, while he might have some fear built up in him there. But nonetheless, that was his understanding of it. God didn't ask him if he's afraid. God didn't ask him if he thought it was a good idea. God said to go and to cry out against this city. And, you know, the rest of the story of Jonah, he does. And, you know, what happens? Well, the city changes, and they repent, and they get better, and they improve, and they change because of the work that Jonah did there. So Jonah overcoming that fear, getting involved, saying what needed to be said, he was able to have a huge impact. I want us to think of this more applicable to our time, you know, in the fear of saying what needs to be said, if you might offend someone or if you might, you know, lose a friend. But to get somewhat specific, I'm not talking about fear of saying something, you know, if your wife puts on an outfit and she asks you, you know, if she looks fat in it, you know, that's one you can say nothing there. That's just a conversation not worth going to. But I'm talking about spiritual matters. I'm talking about saying what needs to be said in regards to someone's spiritual walk. So, you know, for example, maybe you're having a conversation with a coworker or a classmate, and they inform you that, or you find out that they're living with their boyfriend or living with their girlfriend, and they're living in that sin. Do you speak up? You know, do you say anything? I hope you do. That's such a huge issue that's prevalent in our world and in our society, And it doesn't get talked about a whole lot. Or, you know, maybe that same conversation that the same coworker or neighbor or friend or whatever it may be is planning to go get drunk this weekend. You know, what do you say? What do you tell them? What do you talk about? I encourage you to not be fearful of those conversations, but to say what needs to be said. And of course, to say what needs to be said with grace and with mercy and with tact and with the ultimate goal of helping improve that person. Another great example we find is the story of Joseph. And when Joseph is in Potiphar's house, enough about the bad fear. Let's look at where fear can be good for us, and how fear can drive us to act, and how fear can drive us to do things and to get up and to actually make a physical motion towards something. So we find this story, Genesis chapter 39, verses 6 through 9, where Joseph is in Potiphar's house. So thus he being Potiphar, left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So, a great story here. You know, Joseph, in the rest of the story, you know, Joseph is afraid. He's scared not only of Potiphar, his boss, if you will. He's scared of disappointing God. He's scared of the sin that Potiphar's wife is trying to engage with him on. So the rest of the story, again, I encourage you to read the rest of the story. But Joseph, he doesn't hang around. He doesn't engage with her. I don't believe he really even contemplates it. Instead, he runs away. He acts. He gets out of there. He takes off. He leaves. He leaves in such a hurry. Part of his clothes are actually, you know, actually tore up and torn a little bit, because he wasn't hanging around to see what that was. So again, you know, have you ever had a situation in your life that you needed to act, you needed to run away from, you needed to get away from? And college kids, I'm speaking to you specifically about this, because this isn't a new problem. This has been something that was prevalent when I was in school and even before me. I hope you haven't been presented with a situation like this before, but chances are you probably will, that you need, as a Christian and as a believer, you need to run away from and you need to get away from. You know, you're here, you're probably away from your parents, from your home congregation, from your safety and the security that you're used to. And now you can really kind of be your own person. You don't have somebody watching over your shoulder as much as you did. And there will come a time, whether it's a party that goes late into the night or any other number of things that goes on in the college realm, I encourage you to be fearful of those consequences. I encourage you to act and to get away and to get out of those things. And if you need some encouragement or want some other insight into that, please come get with me after, not in this setting, and I will help you all that I can. Another good story where fear is a good thing for us, where fear drives us not to act, or fear drives us to not do something. So here in Exodus chapter 1, verses 15 through 17, the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Sapphira, and the name of the other Puah. And he said, "When you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live." But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them. but saved the male children alive. So a great story here are these two midwives. They're given a directive from the king of Egypt. And we can assume the king of Egypt was pretty used to getting everything that he wanted. And if he made a law, if he made a rule, that's what you were to follow. And I'm sure there were pretty severe consequences for not doing as the king wished. But these two midwives, their fear of the king, their fear of the government, was not nearly as strong, not nearly as prominent as their fear of God. So they didn't act. They didn't do what the king of Egypt wanted them to do. And they didn't kill a bunch of little babies. They chose the correct path. They chose the right thing to do out of fearing God and out of their relationship with God and their belief in God. Sorry, I got out of order a little bit here. So I never want to talk about all these bad things and all these things we can and can't do and all these strict lists and so on and so forth without talking about a solution, without talking about, the cure to all that. And we find that story in the book of Daniel, the story about Daniel in the lion's den. And in Daniel chapter 6, verse 7, all the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps and counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. So to set the stage, Daniel's time, there's a rule passed, there's a law passed that the king signs into law that anyone caught praying is going to be thrown to the lions, okay? So picking up in verse 10, so that law's been signed into law, it's a thing, Daniel knows about it. Verse 10, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before God, as was his custom since early days. So the law to not pray was put into place. And what did Daniel do? He went home and prayed. He didn't care. He was unbothered by that rule. He was more concerned with praying and with his spiritual life. So what happens? Verse 16, so the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. So, pretty cut and dry. There was a law, Daniel broke it, and he got cast into the den of lions. Well, as we know, as we know the rest of that story, Daniel comes out scot-free, right? The lions didn't chew him up, they didn't eat him up. And he got out like he needed to get out. And this had a big impact on the king. And picking up in Daniel chapter 6, verse 25, then King Darius wrote, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure till the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel's faith, Daniel's belief, Daniel's fear of God saved him from the lion's den. Not only did it save him from that, it had such an impact on the king that this is the decree that he wrote, and this is what he desired for all peoples and all nations. So there's kind of been an underlying theme, if you will, in this lesson. And if you haven't picked up on it thus far, I'm gonna make it real plain and real obvious, but it's the fact that we as Christians should all fear God. We should very, very clearly fear God. This isn't something I feel like is a real popular idea today. I feel like, God is someone who's just going to come over and hang out, and we're just going to, visit a little bit. No, that's not the picture that I want us to think about. I want us to think about that the almighty, all-powerful God who created everything, who, the flood and just such an immeasurable amount of power and such an immeasurable amount of force, if you will, that is the God that we need to fear, and we need to fear not obeying that God. In Revelations chapter 14, verses 6 through 7, "Then I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation, tribe, tongue, and people, saying with a loud voice, 'Fear God and give glory to Him, for the hour of His judgment has come. And worship Him who made heaven and earth, the sea and springs of water.'" So I really just kind of randomly chose this out of Revelation, just about fearing God, so on and so forth. But I want everybody to see, this is a picture of my a page out of my Thompson Chain Reference Bible. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's of course a regular Bible, but there's a lot of effort and man hours and put into kind of categorizing a lot of verses into different topics. And this is just a picture of the page of godly fear or fear of God, whether it's prescribed or promised or examples of. And this isn't necessarily a perfect list or an all-encompassing, or there may be a couple in there, that maybe don't exactly fit. But nonetheless, there's almost 200 verses just contained in this one page alone that reference fear of God or being in fear of God. So it's, of course, a very prominent theme in the Bible that, I don't feel like it's, it's preached on just a whole lot. I want to ensure that if you don't take anything else away from this lesson, that we as Christians need to be fearful of God, and we need to be fearful of His almighty power and all His almighty presence. So I want to ask you this again. At the beginning of the lesson, we talked a little, I said, what are you afraid of? And I wanted you to think of, are you afraid of death? And I want you to really think about that. Really, really consider, are you truly afraid of death? And be honest with yourself. This is very significant. So again, are you afraid of death? Years ago, me and some other guys were tasked with putting some tractor tires on a tractor, putting some new tires on. And it was a great big John Deere 9400, about a 40,000-pound machine, and with the eight tires, and it pipped in the middle. And anyway, we started working on this machine, and we had one corner raised up. We had it up in the air, and we got the old tires off. And the new tires hadn't shown up yet, so we started on the other corner. And so we have one half of it raised up in the air, and I'm sitting under this machine, raising up the other side. And as I'm sitting under there, I start to hear a crack, and I start to hear this popping sound. And I turn and look, and the jack on the corner that we just took the tires off of, the wooden blocks are starting to fail. And the jack is starting to lean. And I turn and look at the jack that I'm running, and it's starting to lean. And this whole machine, this 40,000-pound machine, is starting to fall. And as I'm sitting there on the ground, I started to scoot back and kind of shuffle back as fast as I could. And I just as I squeaked out from underneath that machine, it fell all the way to the ground. And I was able to get out. I slid out, and just as I slid out, the frame of that tractor just kind of caught me on the back of my head. It didn't even break the skin. It just kind of knocked my hat off, and that whole thing fell right where I was, and I was scared. I was really scared. That was terrifying. If I had been under there, for another half second, maybe, I probably wouldn't be standing here. That happened when I was a teenager. I probably wouldn't be here today. That was scary. That was terrifying. I was scared to death that day. I was. And I kind of came face to face with that. So again, I want to ask you, are you afraid of death? And the answer is, if you're not a Christian and you haven't been baptized and you haven't repented of those sins, yes, you should be afraid of death. I'm here to tell you that plain as day. And so it is a very scary thought. If you're a Christian, if you're a true believing Christian, should you be afraid of death? And the answer is no. The answer is no, because what we have to look forward to and what we have to look forward to after this and after this life is greater than anything we could imagine here on earth. I don't have it on the screen, but Matthew chapter 10, verse 28. And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. So, you know, this evening, I don't know why you're here. I don't know if maybe you're here because your parents wanted you to be here, or you're here because for whatever other reason, or maybe fear brought you here. I don't know. I don't know your hearts tonight, but I do know that if you fear death and if you fear what happens to you after this life, please use that fear to change. Please use that fear to improve your life. Please use that fear to choose to be baptized and have your sins washed away. You know, if you were here this morning, we got to witness in this baptistry right here someone conquering fear, and her fear was conquered by baptism, and her fear of living a life not worthy to God, it was conquered. And that's conquered through baptism, through the sacrifice that Jesus made for us and his blood being shed for our sins. So tonight, if you are fearful, if you are afraid of death, I encourage you to not wait any longer. Because, you know, just like that story I told, none of us expected that to happen that day. And tomorrow's not guaranteed. It's not promised for anyone. And just please be fearful of God. And please, if you haven't been baptized, please fear death. Please fear God, and please fear the consequences of not obeying His commands. The church stands ready to facilitate any of those needs. If you feel the need, please come on the front as we stand and sing the invitation song.